Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
All right, welcome to the show. This is one of those shows I don't always like doing. This show is about the experiences I've had, and we'll get into a little bit of why Jeff Ritzman had made a comment before we did the show with Greg Bishop, and that turned into this show. So, I hope that by talking about some of this stuff, it resonates with some other people, and I hope maybe it can create better dialogues, and that if you have any experiences that you want to talk to me about, either completely different experiences, I am still collecting listener stories, and we'll be contacting people as I get some time. It's been a rough few months. I really haven't had any free time like I was hoping. But even if you just had an experience and want to relate it or ask me about stuff, always feel free to write contact at wheredidtheroadgo.com. You can message directly off of wheredidtheroadgo.com, or you can find me on Facebook. Any of those work just fine. So without much further ado here, we're going to get into this conversation about some of the damn weird stuff that's happened to me in my life. I hope you enjoyed it. Oh, and there is a slight echo every once in a while when Jeff talks. Once in a while when Joshua talks, there was nothing I could do to get rid of it. It's not horrible, but I know it's there, so I'm sure somebody's going to say, hey, what's with the echo? It's just the way it recorded for whatever reason. All right, here we go. So I have with me tonight Joshua Cutchin and Jeff Ritzman. Hello, everyone.
Good evening.
Hi there.
And Jeff, I think it was like last week, it was before we did the show with Greg, you had mentioned that at some point you wanted to talk to me about my experiences. Because you realized you didn't really know that much about them, because I've never done a show just on my experiences. And instead of just talking about it, I figured, hey, why don't we do a show? And we can get into a little bit of that. The only time I've done a show on my own experiences early on was I did a show on my Kundalini, because I was really hoping, and it was successful in this, that other people would hear that and be like, oh my God, this is what's happening to me. And I got deluged an email from people who had similar experiences and had no idea what it was. So that show, as hard as it was for me to do, was well worth doing. Yeah. But I've of course had a lot of other weird experiences, and I mentioned them here and there as stuff comes up.
You interestingly drop these things. You pepper these things around, and tell me if I'm wrong, audience, but he seems to pepper these things around in interviews like, yeah, well, I remember when I contacted the half-inflated dog lord that time and so on and so forth. And it's like, what is this?
Well, yeah, these casual drops.
Yeah. So, very interesting.
One of my issues is I'm not really good at talking about myself. I never have been. I'm always interested in listening to other people. And it's one of the things people will comment on, that I let my guests talk. And I think, well, yes, that's why they're on, because I want to hear them. I don't want to hear me.
Right.
But if I have something relevant, I'll just toss it out there quick and move on.
Right.
And it takes someone like you to stop and go, hey, wait a minute.
So that said, Soraya.
So starting from that point, has there been anything I've mentioned that you had questions about, or where should we start with this?
I think you need to start like at the start, which is to say, what one of the questions I was asked at the beginning of my my poking around in this in my own life was, what is the first odd thing that you ever remember happening to you?
Kundalini, probably.
Really? Okay. Yeah, what age was that?
Right around 12.
Wow. Okay.
Right around the same time I also developed type 1 diabetes.
Interesting.
And I do think there's a connection between the stuff that's happened to me and that type 1 diabetes. One of the things I used to have are these dreams of this dark black shadow chasing me. And I had them most of my young life. And eventually, at some point, I realized, hey, that's me. And this came in sort of a revelatory sort of thing where I realized that that thing I'm running from is actually me. And then those dreams stopped. And, but I think, I mean, when you look into what type 1 diabetes is, it's basically your body fighting itself.
Okay.
It's your immune system turns on the T cells around your pancreas, which help create insulin, and it destroys them. And I've always wondered,
Oh, I was just going to throw out, was this your, like, your shamanic, trial of health? You know, anything that's part of,
I don't know, but I always wondered, like, is it because I was fighting myself, even though I didn't realize I was fighting myself, that I was running from myself, that the diabetes was like a, my body kind of mimicking that in a sense.
Huh.
You know,
I have to ask this before we get too deep in here, is are we going to be allowed to, and I ask this purely for selfish reasons, are we going to be able to talk about what was going on in your life,
sure.
Aside from this? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't want to go anywhere that you're not comfortable with going. So,
oh, I'll stop. Yeah.
So with the Kundalini thing, you know, anybody who's listening to Paratopia or any of the shows that I've done, knows that Jeremy Vaney is, my broadcast partner, was very into, or is still into, the Kundalini, experience. And he's derived a whole lot out of his experiences that continue to this day with that sort of energy, thing.
Now
how did that manifest for you?
Horrible.
Or in other words, what were you doing at the point that happened?
I have no idea. I mean, so long ago. I honestly, my memories of a childhood are very, very spotty. Okay. I have a few memories here and there. Actually, one of the things I remember, and I don't know exactly when this was, but it was definitely around the same time period. My dad was very into trains. He actually opened up a hobby shop eventually, had this huge train layout, but we had lived on Long Island at the time when I was growing up, and there was this park, and in the park they had this live steam thing. So they had these like miniature trains you could ride, and they were like they work like actual steam engines and stuff. And we used to go there probably every weekend or something like that. And the two things I remember, and one of them, when I look back at it, I'm just kind of amused. I would take my bike there and I'd ride around the park. And these were all in dense woods. And, you know, it was a nature preserve, basically, with this train track running through it.
So you were basically an Amblin kid, right?
I don't know what that means.
Like the Amblin 80s movies where the kids are always on bikes. And
oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Definitely as a kid. So I'd bring my bike and I'd ride around there while they were doing stuff and then come back and, you know, ride the trains and then go out riding again. Cause I really liked riding bikes. And there was one time I went down this trail and I stopped and I looked over and there are these two guys and a girl in the woods kind of secreting away. And I'm kind of like, what's going on there? And then they see me and I'm like, oh crap. And I take off. And of course now I look back and I'm like, oh, they were probably smoking pot.
Yeah,
Occam's razor of teenage behavior. They're probably smoking pot.
But at the time, I had no idea. All I knew is, you know, I stumbled on them and they were kind of like, oh, someone saw us. And I was like, oh, crap. And I remember actually riding away pretty quick because I looked back and they were kind of walking down the trail behind me. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're coming after me. And I hit something and the bike kind of flipped on its side. Like my side actually touched the ground. And then the next thing I knew, I was right back on the wheels again and going. And I'm like, how did that just happen? Like I literally fell sideways and just kept going. And maybe, you know, it seemed like more than it was. I don't know. But I mean, that's one of the only real weird things I can remember from being a child. The other one in that area is that occasionally I would come into these big open areas and everything would just go to that dead quiet, you know, that sort of ominous, dark, like something else is here, I'm getting out of here type of thing.
You know, there are stories, though, of people who, you know, close their eyes at this last minute before they have a collision or something in their cars or whatnot. And they, you know, they open their eyes and they're fine.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole subset of events that people experience. So yep. maybe it was something.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I really don't know. But I mean, as far as early experiences, there was nothing really significant. And like I said, my memory is very, very spotty before a certain point.
When you say spotty, as far as your childhood, everybody has a kind of a feeling barometer, you know, that seems to be associated with early childhood thoughts. What would you say your feeling of being a child was? Was it happy? Was it sad? Was it fearful?
No, it was happy.
What would you say? It was a happy childhood?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. I had a really good family and never had any major issues. So until the Kundalini started, that kind of set my life on its head.
Okay. So what impact did that have on you? And what did that feel like?
Well, it started off with hallucinations and then it turned into intense pain.
Okay.
And that's what I dealt with for a long time. I mean, I knew they were hallucinations. I knew I was seeing things that couldn't be there. And I don't want to cover too much of the Kundalini stuff because I did do a show on it.
You did it. Exactly. That's fine.
It's all the trombone's fault.
Yeah. I would be like playing trombone and I'd see steam coming out of the end of it. And I'd be like, okay, that's not happening because that's impossible. But I could see it. It was there, you know, and I would have my mom come in and I'd be like, stay here for a minute. Tell me if you see anything out of the end. And I'd play trombone and there'd be nothing. All right. And she'd leave, I'd start playing, and I'd see steam coming out of it. And I'm like, I'm losing my mind. There's something really wrong with me.
Right, yeah.
And of course, later when I found out what Kundalini was, most of the hallucinations I had were listed in the list of, here are things you'll experience when Kundalini wakes up. And I'm going, oh, look at that.
Huh.
That was a life-changing moment, because suddenly, you know, that was from, as I've said before, Fate Magazine ran something... an ad for the book or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, this book is listing everything I've been experiencing and had no idea what it was. I used to actually, I think if I remember right, I used to label them as psychic attacks when they happened. Like I thought something was literally attacking me.
Huh. It's interesting because from what, and I don't know a lot about it, so don't quote me on this, but it seems like, is the notion of spontaneous happenings of that, is that common or not common?
Not common.
Not common. Okay.
But it does happen, right?
Yes. I've met quite a few people it's happened to.
Just out of nowhere.
Yeah, I never say out of nowhere.
Well, yeah. Everything has an origin point, but yeah, like spontaneous, more spontaneous than not.
Oh, you mean the Kundalini? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So if we could interject this right quick, walk this back even farther. Is there any sort of family history of weirdness? I mean,
no,
is this something
not that I'm aware of?
Okay. Fair enough.
Now, everyone in my family is very down to earth. They weren't really interested in the stuff. There's no one's ever told me weird stories.
What about the area, like the environmental area? Is there anything that you can think of that would be odd or,
no.
Some kind of major upheaval maybe?
No, especially not when I lived on Long Island. That was like the picture of like, suburban life.
Suburbia. Okay.
Yeah. Very calm, unchanging neighborhood.
Okay. I'm writing this stuff down. So just
now when I did the last show, I had Sherilee Black. I think I got her name right. I know her name, but it's, of course I blank on names when I try to think of them. It's a great thing to have happen. But when I did a two-part show with her and her near-death experiences, and she had initially written me because she also experienced spontaneous Kundalini, but that started, I believe, if I'm not remembering wrong, that started with her first near-death experience. And one of the things Kenneth Ring noticed when he did his Omega project is that people who have the abduction experience, whatever that is, as well as people who have near-death experiences, both tend to have Kundalini afterwards.
Huh. Okay. I'll reserve comment for that until the end.
Okay.
So going forward, that was 12, right? So that's
around it started around 12. I don't know when it got really bad. Maybe around 7th grade, 8th grade, okay. Somewhere in that range.
And I'm assuming that resolved itself at some point.
No, I learned how to handle it.
Okay, gotcha. All
right. But like I said, it's not like something, there's nothing in my mind that set that off. Like it just slowly started happening and got worse and worse. And, you know, I would be in so much pain that they would take me to doctors. The doctors would give me a clean bill of health.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask is how much, how much did you actually reveal to your parents? Did you tell them everything that you were seeing and experiencing? Okay.
Yeah.
And their response was to take you to the doctor. I'm assuming you had psychic exams and what have you.
Yeah, psychic and physical. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And there was, I mean, they weren't really that disturbed by the hallucinations. I think they thought I was just imagining it.
Right.
But the physical stuff, because I was in so much pain, which was right around chakra areas. Not that I had any idea what chakras were.
Interesting.
And, you know, I went to all kinds of doctors and they'd all be like, there's nothing wrong with him. And so my parents are like, why are you making this up? And I'm like, I'm not making this up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Creative person, Sarah, or
more now than then. I don't think I was. I think I was averagely creative for a kid growing up.
Okay. How is your visualization? I mean, can you picture things in your head fairly easily?
Now, yes.
What about back then?
I have no idea.
No memory for that. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
I do have an exceptionally high IQ.
Okay.
I was in gifted and talented programs when I was a child.
Okay. G&T for what exactly?
It was a general thing. Like they started me onto computers back in the '80s. That was when I was in fifth grade. Between fifth and sixth grade, there was one for earth science. Cause I really liked science.
Okay.
And so over the summer, we basically went to school for just, you know, doing earth science stuff and going on field trips and stuff like that. And I love that stuff because I was always kind of a dork.
Right.
You know, right. I wanted to learn things. I wanted to be an archaeologist so I could be like Indiana Jones, and I wanted to be an astronomer so I could find UFOs.
Right. Okay. And when did, so analytics weren't completely off of your radar. In other words, it wasn't relegated to a special interest. In other words, you could handle the analytic stuff as well as maybe the creative stuff in a total package. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I don't recall doing too much creative stuff when I was a kid other than playing with toys and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, like I said, nothing extraordinarily creative as a kid that I would say was extraordinarily creative. I think all kids have some level of creativity.
Okay. Now, I know that the Kundalini things would all be considered in the paranormal box, but is there anything that you can say with reasonable certainty wasn't a result of that, but was more of a classic paranormal experience? Like, when do you feel something like that may have entered into the picture here?
Again, my memory, before I started writing things down, my memory is very hit and miss. And that was around the time I was 19, I think I started writing things down.
Okay.
Because somewhere along the line, something told me I should be writing everything down. So I started writing things down.
So there was a fair variety of weird things growing up.
A lot of stuff that's been told to me has been in semi-dream type states.
Okay.
And the fact that so many of them have been dead on accurate to a degree that I don't even realize until I've been working on this book on all this stuff, where I'm going back and going, oh my God, I can't believe how much information is in this dream that didn't happen for 6 years.
Huh.
You know, so much precognitive stuff and other stuff. I mean, the last time you were on, we were talking about how, you know, basically I was told to be anti-structural in a sense.
Right.
And I didn't understand what that meant. I didn't understand what it was trying to tell me until I read, like I said, it was either Castaneda or Way of Weird, and suddenly went, oh, I get it now.
Right. But you said that you're almost naturally anti-structural. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right.
I'm anti-traditional, anti-structural. I mean, every once in a while I create, like for the music show. Music show I've been doing almost 25 years now, and I'll occasionally build a structure into it. It's a 6-hour show, so I have a lot of room to work with, and I'll be like, this is how I'm going to structure it. And at 2:00, we're going to do this. And at 4:00, we're going to do this. And that lasts a few weeks. And then I go, I'm tired of doing this. I'm going to do it differently now.
Right. Right.
And sometimes I'll do something just long enough that people expect it. And they're like, what happened? And I'll be like, oh, I don't know. I just stopped doing it. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a background switcher on my computer because I can't stand looking at the same background for very long.
Interesting. Okay. How were you in school?
I did great in school until the Kundalini kicked in.
Oh, okay.
And then I still did great in school. I mean, by the time I was graduating sixth grade, I was doing ninth grade work.
Okay.
Because of the gifted and talented stuff. And
right.
Then the Kundalini kicked in, and I just didn't go to school a lot because I was worried what would happen if it kicked in while I was there.
Ah, okay.
And okay. Then, but I could go in and I could pass any test they gave me, but I would fail because of attendance.
I gotcha. How's your relationship to Altered States?
I've never done a drug in my life.
Yeah, you're only, okay, good.
However, I do remember one of the things, and I've talked about this before, was the doppelganger.
Okay, do tell.
So I was late going into school because I didn't want to. I've always been fairly nocturnal. And once the Kundalini and everything kicked in, it actually made me more nocturnal. And, you know, I figured if I'm going to go to school, I'm going to try and shave off as much of it as possible. And so I'd go in late. And so one day I go in late. And I go into the office to get the pass that we needed, you know, if you're late, and which was a common thing. And I walk in there and the woman looks at me and goes, what do you want? And I said, the pass. I just got here. And she's like, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, I did. She's like, no, we've been watching you walk up and down that hallway for the last hour. Now, mind you, I didn't look like anyone else in the school. And I was just like, no, that's impossible. I was home in bed an hour ago. And I'm going, you can call my mother. She'll just drop me off. She'll be home in 5 minutes. You can call her and ask. And finally, they just relented and gave me the pass, like real suspiciously. And I'm just like, what the hell was that?
Good thing you didn't see. Good thing you didn't see your doppelganger there, Soraya.
I don't know how I would have handled it at that point.
Well, you know, traditionally, it would mean that you die, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
With the exception of... with the exception of the fetch in Irish folklore, if you're in that case, if your doppelganger was healthy, then you would be okay. But if your doppelganger was sickly, then you'd die.
Huh. Yeah. So I guess that's one of the earliest weird things that happened to me.
And do you have memory of what you were doing prior to being in the school when they say you were allegedly walking up and down the halls?
I was sleeping.
Of course you were.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You know, and as far as the creativity goes, I don't know why this slipped by me, but I used to play Dungeons and Dragons a lot.
Okay.
Which of course is a, you know, what were you going to say?
I was going to say it's a gateway, Soraya. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got caught. We were playing it in school and we got caught into that whole thing where they were saying it was satanic and these groups were coming around trying to get us to stop playing. We were right in the middle of all of that.
Huh. Well, I guess the next question is, what's next after that? I mean,
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, because until I started writing things down, I don't know for sure. Okay. I mean, there were things like I told this one at Fort Fest. This is a friend of mine, one of my best friends at the time growing up. He would, if he was interested in a girl, he would kind of get you to go to the girl's house with him without telling you that's what was going on.
Right.
So he'd just like, you know, he'd pick you up and it'd be like, hey, let's go do something. And it's like, all right, what are we going to do? Oh, we're going to go see so-and-so. Or he wouldn't even tell you until we got to the person's house. And it's like, oh, so I guess we're going to see this girl, you know? Oh yeah. You know, he was just weird about things like that. And so one night we start walking cause we'd walk around at night all the time and we're walking. He's like, let's go this way. And so we're walking, we must've walked 3 or 4 miles. And now it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's pitch black out. It's so black out, you can't see your hand in front of your face. Now, we live out in the country. No street lights, no nothing. And we're walking to this girl's house, apparently, in the middle of the country. And as we're walking down the road, he has to pee. He walks over to the side of the road. I can't see him. And we hear somebody walking down the road. And we both stop, and we're like, what is that? And I hear him yell over to me, you hear somebody walking? And we hear these very solid, unwavering footsteps walk right between us and continue on down the road. And I'm like, did that just happen? And he's like, yeah, let's go. And then we went to this girl's house. And it's kind of like, it was one of those things where like my brain says, okay, it's not impossible somebody could have been walking down this road, but this road's in the middle of nowhere. It's 2 o'clock in the morning on a weekday, and they, like us, didn't have a flashlight.
Huh. Well, so two things. Number one, travel is a liminal state, right? You're between locations.
Sure.
But the second thing is there's no way it could have been. It was definitely bipedal. It wasn't.
Yes. Oh, no. It was footsteps, like a human walking along. And the footsteps never wavered. That's the other thing. Like, if it were me and I heard two people on the side of the road, I might either slow down or speed up. And these were steady the entire time. Like, I was looking right at where the sound was coming from, and I couldn't see anything, but it was so dark. You know, it's kind of like I wonder if I had a light with me and I shined that light, would there just been a guy going, oh, you know? Or would it have just showed my friend on the other side of the road? I have no idea. I mean, it always struck us both as weird because of the time and because of how dark it was. And, you know, how many idiots walk around at 2 o'clock in the morning with no flashlight?
Well, obviously three, right?
Yeah. or it wasn't a person.
Two and a half.
Right, exactly.
I had actually asked him about this recently. I said, hey, do you remember the time that person walked between us and there shouldn't have been a person there or whatever? And he's like, yeah, but that's not the weirdest thing that ever happened with you. And I'm like, yes, I know.
Huh. Okay. So there's that, which, you know, that's a weird thing. But yeah, if you go forward of that, now you say that there's not, you didn't have notes before 19 years old because you didn't keep notes for that.
Right.
But if I asked you, was there some kind of like seminal weird thing that happened before the age of 19? Would you remember something?
No.
Really? Let's profoundly
not
weird?
Really. No,
let's regress them. Let's regress you.
Let's use hypnosis.
Yes. I want you to count backwards from 100.
The weirdness definitely built slowly. Like, it wasn't like I was inundated with weirdness. It was a slow build. Little things like that would happen. And also, when I started practicing magic, more stuff happened.
Well, yeah.
And I think I've mentioned, you know, when I started practicing magic, it was interesting to me, but at the same time, I didn't believe it for a moment. I said, this stuff isn't going to do anything. And then it had effects and things started happening. And I went, huh, now I'm really interested.
Right. So at the age of 19 and you started keeping notes. Now, you know, I know you've mentioned a UFO sighting at one point of something massive.
That was a good 10 years later.
Okay. Is it for you? Is it repeated UFO sightings or
no?
Okay.
I have seen just a few different UFOs and only that one really big one.
Okay.
And nothing related. I mean, two of them happened during liminal periods where things were changing, which of course I didn't notice when they happened. But I noticed honestly after talking to Mike Cleland and went, huh.
Okay.
So that makes sense there.
Okay.
Yeah. So it would have been 2000 when that happened.
2000.
Somewhere I have the exact date. It was like June 6, 2000 or something.
Okay. So did you never have a period in your life where it was a three-ring circus?
No. I mean, not like you did.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's fair enough.
My stuff was generally pretty spaced out. Okay. And going through my notes, I see that even more, that the only time where I had a lot of activity and I didn't keep any notes was when I was dating one particular person who also had massive Kundalini, and stuff just happened with us on a daily basis.
Did you know that when you met her?
I knew after talking to her for a little bit. So she was the person that, when I said earlier, I had things predicted 6 years in advance. She was the person that was predicted 6 years in advance.
Ah.
Like, I was given all this key information that only would have applied to her. And when I first met her, which was in a weird, weird sort of like million and one chance that I even would have met her, something clicked immediately. And the more I talked to her, I was just like, wow, it feels like I know you already. This is so strange. And it wasn't till, like I said, more recently when I was working through the book that I found one of the quote dreams where I was given a lot of information. I'm like, oh my God, this is dead on. Like every piece of this.
Sure.
But yeah, after talking to her a little bit, it was like, okay, she started telling me stuff that was happening to her, and I'm like, yeah, I can explain some of this for you.
Okay. And the thing I find interesting about your kind of trajectory in this is that you say that you're told things, but that when I ask you, told to you by whom,
no idea,
or by what, you don't know. I mean, I find that to be highly interesting. just that you don't attribute it to a facade of any kind. I mean, how comfortable are you with not knowing what the like where that may come from? Does that sit well with you? Do you want to know who actually is behind this, or does that not come into play for you as a question?
It really doesn't. I feel like I've always had some level of faith in this stuff, especially after a certain point. So much of the stuff has been dead on, you know, like I get told things and then those things happen. I get told to do a certain thing and then that has a positive effect. And it's kind of like, okay, as far as I can tell, I've never been lied to. I've never been intentionally misled. Nothing bad has come about from any of it. So it's kind of like, okay, whatever this is, whether it be my higher self, whether it be some kind of other intelligence, it clearly isn't trying to harm me.
Gotcha. Huh. Can you describe how it's communicated? Is it kind of a knowing? Is it a
occasionally
voice? Is it
occasionally? You know? Okay. So one of the, this was when I was keeping notes. Okay. So sometimes it's just a knowing. It's like a psychic sense of things. And this is a great example. One of my co-hosts who normally listens to this show, Josh met him actually at Fort Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh is still with us.
Yep. I'm here. I'm listening.
He was going to Cornell. He was a post-grad student. And when he signed up for the whole post-grad thing he was doing, one of the things they said is they may send him somewhere else for this project he was working on. And since he didn't really have a lot of friends in Ithaca, he didn't really care. He said, sure, you know, whatever. And then he had become a part of my radio show. And he really didn't want to leave. And all of a sudden they said, hey, we're sending you to like Michigan or something. And he was like, oh man, I don't want to go, but I can't not go because I signed all this legal stuff saying I'll go where they send me. So for a few weeks he kept, you know, he comes in and he goes, I got some really bad news. They're sending me to Michigan. And I kind of looked at him and just said, no, you're not leaving. And he was like, no, I am. They're sending me to Michigan. There's nothing I can do about it. And I was just like, no, you're not going. And he would actually get kind of upset with me. He's like, no, seriously, I'm leaving. There's no way out of this. And it kept going. And week after week, anytime he said that, I'd be like, dude, you're not leaving. And I don't know why I was so certain. I just was. And the week before he was supposed to leave, like the last time I saw him, he's like, yeah, the thing's already set up. I'm leaving in 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. He's like, there's no way out of there. There's no way this isn't going to happen. The next week he walks into the studio and he goes, how the F did you know? And I turned around and looked at him and went, no, what? And he's like, I'm not leaving. And I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know.
So that was a feeling you felt you could totally lay back on and go, nope.
Yeah, it was just a very solid, it wasn't, I mean, I didn't want him to leave, but that wasn't it. I just knew he wasn't supposed to leave and he wasn't going to.
Huh.
And it would have completely changed his life if he left.
Huh.
I mean, today he would have a completely different life. And I think someone said something like, I made him not leave. And I said, no, I don't think that's it. I just don't think it was in his life path. Whatever that means, I just knew he wasn't going at that point.
Huh.
I've always described it as like, you know, you and I are sitting in a car, we're driving down the road, and on the right-hand side, you know, I'm the passenger, and I look out and I see a sign half covered in brush that says rest area 2 miles. And I look over at you and I say, hey, there's a rest area in 2 miles. And you go, what? No, there's not.
Right.
How would you know that? And I'm like, but there was a sign. I just read the sign. You know, it's not like, oh my God, this is amazing secret information. It's just my perspective was different.
Right. I got to be honest. I'm perplexed about where to go with this. This is not what I expected. Let me just throw this out there. This is not what I expected. Now, I expected that, and I got to admit and say this, that most of the people that I've talked to in this that have a really solid interest, a solid curiosity about these things, while they may say, I'm just an innocent bystander to this, I'm just very interested and compelled to investigate and talk about these things, you find out sooner or later that they've had a lifetime of very weird things. This is just something that you find out. And a lot of them, I can tell you folks, a lot of them that you meet in this field in particular, that have solid interest, and they're not necessarily podcast hosts or anything. They could be authors. They could be bloggers. You find out that somewhere down the line, they've had a lifetime of some very strange things, or a period of life that was extremely strange. Whereas with you, Sarai, it seems to be the touch-off point at 12 years old with the Kundalini thing.
Yeah.
And so if I'm a betting guy, I'm gonna lay my hedge bet on that is kind of the crux of where all these things erupted from, because it makes sense, right? Yeah. You know, all of they I'm sure that Jeremy has told me before, and if I get this wrong, he'll kill me. But that, you know, when you have this kind of, like, he had an experience where he was everything.
Right.
Yeah, he experienced this mind-blowing migraine, excruciating pain. And at a certain point, he said it felt like something unzipped the back of his neck down to his back, and he was pulled backwards through it, to which he saw what I could only describe as the Big Bang. Planets, you know, galaxies. And then at the same time, on those planets, there was water. He was the water. He was the ground. He was the air, the clouds, the everything. He was experiencing the totality of existence.
Yeah.
And so from there, he began to have some very strange experiences, such as, and again, Jeremy, if you're listening to this and I get it wrong, just cuss me out later. I remember him telling me one day that he was either in the shower or laying on the couch, and all of a sudden he was seeing a perspective of someone else going through a normal activity of the day, whatever it might have been. And then it snapped back. So he had these psychic things, and I would say to him, well, you're psychic. That's what this is. And he goes, well, that's kind of a side effect of this I am experience, or this Kundalini thing.
Yes.
That's kind of a byproduct. You don't have to stop there. And what psychics do is they tend to have that kind of experience, and they kind of stop there and figure that this is the end. This is what it brought me. This is where I am. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like you have arrived at an end in relation to that initial experience, or are you still progressing?
There's still interesting progressions going on all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, for every one of these big things that you've had, Soraya, I feel like every third time I talk to you, there's some sort of little tiny, you know, throwaway thing.
Like my poltergeist.
Yeah.
The other thing with that co-host that this girl I was friends with, and this is the only person this ever happened with, I could literally pick up what she was thinking sometimes. And I wouldn't realize that was happening sometimes, so I would answer her before she asked questions. It would just in her voice pop into my head, and I'd respond to her. Now, I couldn't do it to her. Like, she couldn't pick up what I was thinking, but for whatever reason, if it was the right frequency or whatever, she would go to say something and I'd answer her, and she'd be like, I'm never going to get used to that. Because after a while, it happened all the time. And so he was, you know, he was definitely more skeptical of these things, even after the you're not leaving thing. Or maybe the you're not leaving thing broke him. Maybe that was the thing that finally broke him of that. But he, her, and I are sitting in the studio one night, and she's reading some magazine, and he and I are talking. And she kind of looks up and goes, and before she asks the question, it pops into my head. I answer her, and she's like, yep, never going to get used to that. And he's like, oh, well, he's psychic. And she's like, I know, he does it to me all the time. And then a moment later, he realizes that I couldn't have guessed what she was going to ask because it was so out of context of anything going on in the room. And he just kind of looks at me and goes, how did you know what she was going to ask? I'm like, I don't know. It just pops in my head. And she goes, seriously, he does it to me all the time.
Now, was there anything at all about this woman that you connected with more? Or, I mean, is there anything?
Well, I mean, we connected, but not like, I mean, I've connected with other people much stronger.
Any sort of shared geographical history, shared,
nothing.
You see, you're you're like the exception that proves the rule or something. I don't know where to go. I'm like Jeff. I don't know.
There's very little to grab onto is what I'm getting at. Like usually there is a narrative of some sort. There's a thread that kind of connects these different things together in some way or shape or form. And I think that there is, I think that the Kundalini kind of thing has kind of traced its way out through this because you're still experiencing these things. And is it by virtue of that? And the question always is going to be, well, what is that? What is that? And why did that happen to you? You know, at that age, you know, and again, I have to refer back to Jeremy because he's the only experience that I have in talking about this. And I got to be honest with you. Half the time, I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. Like he's completely separate from me in that sense that I have a really hard time understanding. And I think he is frustrated. He has frustrated himself at some times in trying to explain it to others because it's such a complex, rich, deep, you know, very difficult thing to put into any kind of words. And he's related that to me. But for my money, listening to the way Jeremy kind of had his experience with it, he was reading Krishnamurti, and he was reading these bits and I said, well, what were you looking for? And he said, well, I don't know that I was looking for anything. I was reading these books to get a better understanding of what he was trying to get at. And eventually he said it was a process of giving up. Like he gave up and he realized he's never going to be able to attain these things. It's never, and boom, it erupted on top of him. you know, when he gave up, I mean, does any of that sound familiar to you or you don't know, or
no, not really. It really doesn't, okay. but he also, I mean, he's looking into practicing Kundalini yoga. He knew what it was. He was intentionally trying to work with it. Whereas I had no idea. For a decade, I had no idea what was happening to me.
Right.
And I just tried to ignore it as best I could. I mean, I have a very high pain tolerance. Mm-hmm. And it literally made me black out from pain while standing one day.
And what kind of pain? I haven't asked that before. Like, what was the focus of pain?
It is generally focused around chakras. Again, I didn't know what chakras were when this started, but it was generally focused around chakra areas. And it feels like somebody takes a burning knife and stabs you with it and starts twisting. Okay. The degree to which varies.
Inside?
Yes.
Okay, so deep inside pain. Not like back pain or chest pains or anything like internal pain.
And the most common, especially with me, the Kundalini starts just inside the tailbone. And that is where I had the most pain.
Huh.
And again, as a kid, that was, well, you must have something wrong with your digestive system, except I didn't. But I had literally got to my bedroom door one night and it was just throbbing because it pulses. It doesn't, it's not like a constant pain. I think the only thing I've ever felt that was worse was I had an abscessed tooth once.
Okay.
And I think that pain was worse. But the thing with the tooth, too, is it took days before the pain went away, whereas the Kundalini will come and then it'll go. You know, it doesn't last for hours and hours usually. Usually it lasts for 10, 15 minutes and then subsides.
And do you still have these pains in any way?
Oh, yeah. Every once in a while. Okay. But I also know how to move the energy around now, too.
Okay.
But if I do get pain, I mean, pains supposedly are caused by blocks. So if I start getting pain, I'm thinking, okay, what am I blocking? Like, why is this hurting? It should just be moving.
Okay. So, wow. So, it's like every goddamn word you say opens another book. And right now I'm looking at like a stack here. forget the energy moving thing for a minute. okay. So when you say block, would you say that a fair and accurate way to describe this would be that when you have any sort of emotional, mental, maybe even some kind of physical worry or stress, that culminates in chakra pain, as you put it, this internal burning knife happens, and you can therefore address whatever issue that you're having in your life or worry or stress, and that will alleviate that. So are you essentially, are emotional and psychological stresses manifesting as these painful centers in the way of chakra?
As far as I can tell, it's always unconscious stress.
Unconscious stress. Okay.
So it's not something I'm aware of, and that's why it's manifesting as pain. And usually it takes me sitting down and meditating for a while before things start popping into my head, and I start going, oh, well.
Huh, okay.
You know, I've been hearing this stuff for a while, so I mean, I what is sort of striking to me is that you didn't, I mean, the closest thing to like a shamanic awakening would have been this type one thing, but that doesn't still doesn't really have the mouthfeel that I would think would be requisite for a shamanic awakening.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, one of my Patreons, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, asked a question, and this would probably be a good time to answer it. Let me make sure I know what I'm talking about.
Here's a question I could ask you, Soraya.
Yeah.
What, because I know that one of your things has been that you started noticing that you were having some of the hallmarks of the abduction experience without the actual abduction experience.
Right. Yeah. And I think what, it was the,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what is the closest thing to that that's happened to you? Just some sleep paralysis or?
Probably the sleep paralysis, but I also would get knocking. And I think it was the knocking when Streber mentioned the three knocks in transformation. And I was like, wait, that's happened to me. And there was something, it was a lot of stuff Streber was saying was happening to him was gelling with me. And I was going, wait a minute, this stuff happens to me, but not in this context. And then I started thinking, what if it's not aliens? Or I think initially I thought, am I dealing with aliens? And I said, you know, I don't have any evidence I'm dealing with aliens. I don't know what I'm dealing with, but maybe to some people, whatever I'm dealing with also appears as aliens.
Right. So yeah, they're just stumping us.
The question yeah. in the Ask Us Anything in the on Patreon was from Betty, and she wanted to know about Soraya Azkath, the name. And I think I've briefly mentioned this before, but I don't know. So, and I might have some of the timeline a little wrong because I realized I had it a little wrong. When I started going over my notes, it was more or less correct, but I think certain things happened a wider space apart than I realized. So the name Soraya was given to me, and I did not initially want to use it. And so what happened was, there was one point I had a very strong Kundalini experience, and I felt like I was dying. And this wasn't totally unusual for Kundalini, but this was worse than any time before. Like, I literally thought I was going to die. And then it stopped. And as soon as it stopped, I got hit with so much information. I think that's actually when the shadow thing, when I started realizing that shadow that was chasing me all those years, that was me. Like, I wrote pages and pages of notes, like little revelatory things that it's like they were just behind this dam. And all of a sudden, the Kundalini broke the dam and all this stuff was coming out. And I couldn't stop writing all this information down. And it all made perfect sense. Shortly after that, I had this altered state experience, and I was asleep at the time. And the cliff on Seneca Lake that we used to hang out with, that all kinds of weird stuff happened, I found myself there. And there were these robed figures, which I know, Jeff, you might have some experience with robed figures.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of on the periphery. It was dark, and they were kind of off to the side. And I actually referred to them as watchers, because they were just kind of standing there. You could barely see they were there, but they were watching what was going on. And there was this dark shadow. It was like liquid darkness. And the thing slammed into me, and I hit the ground, and it was incredibly painful. And I got back up, and it did it to me again. And I got back up, and it did it to me again. And every time it hurt more. It felt like literally being slammed into the ground by being hit by a truck. And I was just like, I'm not staying down. And I started hearing someone say to me, stay down. And so I'd get up and it would knock me down and I'd hear, stay down. And I'd get up and because I didn't know what the right thing to do, but I'm stubborn. And I think I finally said, you're going to have to kill me to keep me down. And whatever was talking to me grabbed me and dragged me out of it. And I literally like bounced up in the bed. And after a long rushing tunnels like sensation, and I had bruises all over from this.
See, to me, that would be the event that sounds most like an abduction event to me. I mean, that's...
Sort of, but it doesn't fit the...
No, no, it doesn't.
Yeah. And I didn't know how to make this, or how to take this. I was like, I don't know what just happened. Was I supposed to stay down? Was that what they were trying to show me? Was I supposed to keep getting up? Was it a test of some sort? I didn't know. And then a few people I knew also said, did you do something? Because... I just had a weird encounter with something and I don't know what the hell it was, but it wasn't pleasant. And I was like, okay, so whatever it is not, it's not just me. Like this thing,
these are friends or close friends. Okay.
One was a woman who was sort of tutoring me in magic. Huh? And she had the most intense encounter. And I was just like, oh, and I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't try to do anything, but this just happened. And she was very traditional in how she practiced magic, and she was not happy with the fact that I wasn't. Okay. And without me saying anything, right around the same time that this, like right after this happened, she had this encounter where this thing attacked her, and she was like, what the hell did you do? And I'm like, I don't know. And so shortly after that, I was we had gone to see the Scorpions, and I was riding home with a friend of mine, and him and his wife were in the front. He's driving. I'm in the back with a friend of mine. She's asleep. And this voice from the right side of my head just says, Soraya, really loud. And it was the best way I could describe the voice is a voice I recognized immediately, but I couldn't tell you whose voice it was.
Now, I think I've asked you this before, but have you looked into the meaning of that or any historical?
Yes. Report?
Yeah.
So initially when this happened, like I knew immediately that was my name. And I said, I'm not using that name. And eventually when I started using it, things started falling in place. From simple things like it's a unique name and people remember it to things just seemed to gravitate to me once I started using that name. So that's where Soraya came from. Azkath came to me like they had given me the other part again in a dream state. And I was like, okay, so that's the second part of it. And when I laid everything out, like I translated it into different languages, I laid it out on the Kabbalah and found that one was completely on one side of the tree, the other was completely on the other side of the tree. And I always felt like it was supposed to be a balance, like one name is more feminine, one name is more masculine. And when that voice hit me, it like I said, there were two other women in the car. Both of them sound asleep at the time, and it came from the side of the car that had a window at it. So it's not even like it came from in the car. It came from the side, and it was only in my one ear, but boy, was it loud.
Huh?
So that's where the Soraya thing came from, huh?
Loud and clear. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You asked the history of the name. So when I first had that name, I there was no internet at the time. I tried to do some, you know, research in the library, couldn't find any reference to it anywhere. When the internet started up, I couldn't find any reference to it anywhere. One of the things that I knew was that I was supposed to find somebody else with this name. And I was like, this name doesn't seem to exist. I looked everywhere I could. And when I mentioned the person that I met, that I had all that also had the massive Kundalini, she was using that name. I was not looking for the name at the time. I was looking up somebody else that I was trying to get an interview with, and she popped up, and I went, there's my name. Why, who is this person? So that was one of the weird connections there, because I never would have met her if it wasn't for using that name. It just never would. And she got the name the same, not the same exact way, but it was just given to her at some point. And she said, okay, I'm going to start using this name.
Huh.
Also had similar experiences with similar entities that I did, you know, where we started comparing notes and going, okay, this is the same thing I've been interacting with.
Well, you know, ASCAP has a real sort of grimoiric feel to it.
Yes, yes. and neither name is exactly the name I was given. They're sort of deviations of it. Mm-hmm. Because I think using the real name would, you know, I think names have power.
You cannot pronounce the name in my tongue.
Well, I think names have power. And if someone knows your real name, it's like knowing the real name of a demon. You know, the whole idea is if you know its real name, you can control it. But I do think there is something to, you know, if you know someone's true name, you can have some power over that. So this was sort of the modified version that I started using publicly. And what was the thing you asked me, Josh?
Just about if there was the historical significance. Story,
yes, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I remember
somebody called in, or somebody said to you sometime when I was around you, and they said, you know, it sounds like a Civil War name. And I was like, that's interesting. I can see that.
Hmm. Well, it is, as far as I know, it's not. I just recently, within the last few months, every once in a while, I search Google for it. And the closest I could find before is in the Mormon Bible. There is a Sariah with an extra I in it. And I guess the terminology means Prince of the Lord. Prince of the Lord. That's all I could really find. But more recently, I found some obscure biblical texts that mention a Sariah back in biblical times that was like the guardsman of some temple or something like that.
Apocryphal sort of texts, or
yeah, I don't know. There wasn't a lot of information. It was one of those things where it gives you a snippet, and then you have to pay for, you know, the full article. Mm-hmm. But the article would just mention that name. It wasn't like about that name. It's just it was someone mentioned, and I went, "Oh my God!" So there is an actual biblical reference. Aside from that, the name doesn't seem to exist popularly until probably about 1993. It starts popping up. I was given it in 1991. I knew one person who actually named her daughter after me shortly after it happened because she loved the name. So I don't know if that's what brought it into popular existence right there, that other people heard. I know a friend of mine who would hang out at the radio show sometimes named her daughter after me, but never told me. I don't think she so much named it after me as much as she just liked the name. And in modern usage, it's almost always female.
Yeah, babycenter.com says that the origin is, the meaning of the name is origin.
Huh.
Sariah, Serih. Girl's
you
name.
You got that bookmark, origin. Jeff?
Uh-huh. Girl's name meaning origin and popularity. Now, whenever I get these names that come from, I don't know, non-local sources, I always do them backwards too.
What do you mean? Like spell them backwards?
Take the letters and take them backwards. And when you do that, you get hairs, and it's an obsolete spelling of hairs.
Huh.
How fitting is that? so yeah.
I was able to find a couple of references to the name, one in like the 1600s and one in the 1980s for some woman in Haiti or something like that, who was on trial for something. And that's it.
Right.
Other than those two vague references, there's between biblical times and now, there's nothing, at least nothing that shows up on the internet.
Well, there's a thing here called 7reflections.com. If you've looked at that.
No, I don't know.
I'm just going to read you what it says here. It says, you are spiritually intense and can sting or charm. Your name brings love and new starts into life and attracts money. Haha. In business,
I wish that part was true.
In business, you are the creator and promoter of original ideas and usually enjoy considerable financial success. You have exciting life, and you are versatile and have the ability to learn easily.
Aside from the money thing, that's not totally untrue.
You find best contentment in life when you own your own home and provide well for your family and loved ones. You have a great sense of responsibility and duty. You're comforting, appreciative, and affectionate. Your obligation in life is to hold justice and truth. And if you follow the law, you can find the great happiness and satisfaction. So I don't know if that's just some new age fairy crap or not, but there's a lot of here that, you know, names, what is it? Nameslist.org.
Yep. I think I've looked at that one.
Gives the same thing. It says, you know, the origin of Soraya unknown.
Yes.
Interesting.
And as long as we're playing, as long as we're playing Scrabble here, a quick anagram generator. The only English word that I could find that uses all letters of Soraya is ashier, as in being ash colored.
Yeah.
Don't know if that has any significance. Probably not. But
it's what's significant to me is the fact that the name doesn't really seem to exist until it was given to me, and now it's actually a semi-popular name.
Right.
And it's like, okay, if I saw tons of this name in the 80s, I'd say, okay, well, maybe I heard it somewhere. Maybe I heard the name somewhere, and then somehow it got into my head that night. I mean, I was wide awake and everything when this happened. But
I think it's a good name. I mean, I think it's a good name. You're lucky you didn't get saddled with, like, you know, Zihas or something. I mean,
or Sierra.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean.
I mean, people screw it up all the time, but you know, that happens. It gets auto-corrected to cereal a lot.
Right. Well, here's my confession. When you first contacted me, you contacted me on Facebook.
Right.
And your profile picture, was a guy with long hair and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got on Skype with you, I was expecting the girl.
Sexist.
So that's why you started talking to me.
Yeah, that's it. No, I did. I mean, that was like, and I was like, oh, okay. And I for a good 10 minutes after we were talking, I'm like, I wonder when Soraya is going to get on the line. Because I thought you guys are married and you have the show and this is the show. And yeah, so I had a real warped sense of what was going on. And then I realized, oh, well, that's Sarai. Okay, great. Now I get it. But yeah, I mean, that was, I had never heard that name ever. Yeah. I had never even seen that name anywhere. And so you, now here's the, begs the question, you know, did you officially adopt this name? You know, like legal, is this your legal name now?
It is not. Okay. It is not my legal name.
Okay. All right. But that is what everybody knows you as.
Depends when they've known me from.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Cause I find in a business environment, it's better to use my real name.
Okay.
Gotcha. Because Soraya stands out as such an odd name. You say that and people, and I've had people think it was like Middle Eastern. I've had people, I mean, all kinds of stuff that, because people just don't know how to place that name.
Yeah, you're getting on a no-fly list real quick.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I had this girl contact me out of the blue, and she just writes me, she says, I know you, don't I? And it was on some social media site, I don't remember which one. And she's like, I know you. And I'm looking at her going, I have no idea who this person is. And I said, well, if you do, I don't know how. You know, I said, I do a couple of radio, or I think I just did the one radio show at the time. And I'm like, so was it that? She's like, I don't know. She's like, but I know this name. She's like, I know your name. I know I've talked to you. And I'm completely blanking on it. And so I start talking to her, and she turned out to be pretty cool. And she was in a metal band and stuff. And I'm like, maybe it was the radio thing. You know, you're in a metal band. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. She's like, but I know we've talked. And I'm thinking, okay, well, if we did, I don't remember you. And all of a sudden, one day she had apparently logged into an old email address and had a conversation we had about the band she was in at the time. And she sends it to me. She's like, I knew you from somewhere. And I'm thinking, oh, like we literally had like one exchange of email and that was it. But the name stuck with her 10 years later.
Wow. Yeah. So there you go. I mean, that's it's memorable.
Yes.
Like, and what's interesting about you is like all of these things, like they're not, they're certainly not unheard of events for people.
No.
And the thing that fascinates me about you is, well, all of this, but most of all, what fascinates me about you is that you have, apparently have never had much fear of any of this.
No.
Like, this doesn't worry you.
Because one of the things they showed me, they'd put me in situations in sort of an altered state where I had to detach from what was going on. And I learned how to carry that over into this state. So when something weird starts happening, I go into the sort of that detached state.
How?
I don't know. I just learned how to do it. It's just, I step away from myself. So I function on almost what's a purely logical level rather than giving into impulses.
Okay.
So I might feel like, okay, I want to run right now. I'm going to step away from this and I'm going to observe what's going on instead.
So you just throw senses wide open to it.
Sort of. Yeah. I go into an observational mode.
Okay.
And that fear, the fear is there when some of this stuff happens. Sometimes the fear is there stronger when I think back on it than when it actually happens.
Okay.
So I'll go, oh, yeah, when that happened, I was perfectly calm and okay. But now that I'm thinking about it, why was I perfectly calm and okay?
Yeah, okay. So did you ever have a fear of it? I mean, because these are pretty intense and bizarre experiences. I mean, one can't negate that.
Yeah, not to mention the demon monkey, right?
Okay, the demon monkey really freaked me out.
Okay, well, there you are. Okay.
The demon monkey came after... it's connected to another event, but I don't remember which one. I didn't realize it was connected. There was this really, I think I had done a ritual of some sort and I felt like things went really wrong. And the entire back part of my yard just felt really bad. And I was walking along it going, what is going on here? And as I'm walking along the cornfield, I hear movement and I look over and I swear what I saw was a demonic looking monkey crawl out between the stalks. And my spine just went ice cold. I was like, what the hell am I looking at? And then it just kind of dissipated. And then I thought, okay, that was probably an optical illusion. It's dark out. It's, you know, there's a little bit of wind. They probably moved just right. And I'm already feeling this sense of like something's not right. So I don't know what that was, but it creeped me the hell out. And I couldn't even walk back toward that part of the yard for a while because I just like, the memory of that just freaked me out to no end.
As it would.
Yeah.
But I don't consider that like an actual paranormal thing because
that stuff happens all the time.
Well, because I think it could have been caused by the feeling of the environment and the movement of the corn stalks, and it was dark out. So okay. There was like moonlight or whatever, enough to see. But a play of light and shadow in the right mood could have caused that. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't count that as paranormal, but despite whether or not there was anything actually there, it freaked me out. And the feeling was definitely there. That vibe in the yard was definitely there and impossible to ignore.
Okay. Would you say that compares to my doom feeling? Heavy?
That was a little different. That was like there was something bad in the yard. Not so much like something bad was going to happen. Like it was just, it felt like really negative energy.
Okay.
No, you're, I know what you're talking about with the doom feeling. That's the feeling I've gotten before, as I said, at the Ithaca graveyard occasionally. That feeling of oppression, like you just, something just doesn't want you there or something is about to happen.
Something's coming for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I've actually used that as well. So when I've gone there and I've, people I've been working with on some of this stuff, I've utilized that as well. You can walk right through the area where that feeling is coming from. And so what I started doing is, can I walk through this area? Because it's such a strong feeling. When it's there, it's really, really strong. And I'm like, can I walk through it? I'm going to walk through it because I know logically nothing is going to happen. But, you know, all my senses are on edge. They're like, run, you know, and it's like, nope, I'm going to walk through it. And every time I've ever done that, the feeling goes away when you get to the other side.
Huh.
Like it's almost like the area clears off, and it's kind of like, well, that's interesting. And it gives you kind of a feeling of empowerment because you just defeated this thing, you know?
Right.
Not necessarily that it was a battle, but you just were able to do that. And I've had other people do that where we've been there and I've said, okay, you feel that? And they're like, yeah, I don't like it. And it's like, walk through there. And some people can't do it, but when the people who have and have gotten to the other side, they're like, wow, I feel great now.
Huh.
And I think if nothing else, that's psychological. Like they realize they just defeated that fear. You know, it was a completely irrational fear. They dealt with it. And now that they're on the other side, they're going, wow, you know, I feel invigorated.
Okay.
And nothing's ever happened to anyone. So, I mean, to me, it almost seems like it's a tool.
Huh. Okay.
A lot of this stuff I look at is, what is it trying to teach me?
Okay. I'm only speaking from my experience with weird stuff like this. I mean, my reaction to that feeling is that particularly at the condo where we lived before here, that's where we got that all the time. And the notion of that, I didn't want to go out. Like, I didn't want to go outside. I didn't want to get in the car and drive around. Cause that wouldn't be good. Excuse me. And yet I would stay inside and like pace around the house. So there were times, there were times where nothing happened when that was very much in present in the room. But I would say more times than not, something weird would happen. It wasn't always some horrifying thing, but it was a subtle thing or we were on the second floor and Lisa saw someone's head walk by. We're on the second floor. It's, you know, so like that kind of stuff. And she would go, did you see that? That kind of thing would happen. One night we were laying on the couch and that feeling was all around and I was just laying there. I was like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, what am I going to do with this? And this was about the time all our friends had left. Right. So like we had no friends at that point and still largely don't.
Oh, I see what you mean. All right.
You know, and an arm, went right between us, an arm, you know, like an arm with a flannel shirt, a flannel sleeve. Went right between us. And I'm like, did you see that? She goes, yeah, the flannel shirt. I was like, yeah, it was a flannel shirt. What was that? So it was something dumb like that that would show up. But then again, every once in a while, it would be some kind of ufological weirdness would happen. Right. And I wouldn't know how to deal with that. Like the notion of saying, we'll walk through that. What are you, crazy about walking through that? Like that's just from experience. Like that's ingrained in me. Like if it's in the hallway, I'm not going down the hallway. And I don't even know why I say that. See, this is why I admire you so much for this stuff, is that I cannot, and I, this has been in my life, most of my life. And Jeremy always says to me, well, all this stuff, haven't you, can't you deal better with it? No, I can't. You know, and that's why I'm picking your, like, how do you do that? How do you, is it just like you literally have to just force yourself to do it?
In a sense. But like I said, it literally feels like I'm just stepping outside of myself. It's like, you know, okay, I'm going to play this character in this video game and just have him do what I need him to do. It's okay. Like, it feels like a physical separation. Like I'm me, but I'm not emotionally invested in what's happening. It's like almost the emotional part of me just gets shut down.
Okay.
It's probably almost a touch like what someone like what a psychopath may feel, you know, where they don't have that emotional response to things. They you know, they just do whatever. They don't care. It's sort of like that, I would suspect. Okay. Except I do care. It's just shut down for, you know, for a few moments.
Yeah, maybe it's like that, but maybe it's like the, you know, the soldier who's been through, you know, countless battles and is able to just switch off the fight or flight, you know. Mm-hmm. Because you've been through so much stuff. I mean, the stuff that the little stuff that happens to you would have me, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, wetting the bed.
All right, and that's where we are stopping for this week. Again, I hope me getting into all this stuff is helpful to some of you out there, interesting to others. I just have a hard time talking about this stuff and talking about myself in general. So, all right, there is another part to this. Patreons will get it right away. Everyone else, it'll probably be next week's show, or I'll put it up during the week, depending on how this week goes. I got a bunch of stuff coming up. Some really interesting stuff coming up. Follow us on Facebook. Join our Facebook group, whatever. Keep up to date as to what is going on Where Did the Road Go. We're going to take you out tonight with a Japanese band. This is a band called Necronomidol. And they say they play black metal, dark wave, new wave, British heavy metal, and other eclectic genres of music. They are Japanese, and I believe it's basically a one-man band with five female singers. That's what I'm making out of this anyway. It's pretty interesting, and in Japanese. So, we are going to hear a track called Psychopomp. And you can find them online at necronomidol.com, and that's NecronomiDol.com. Kind of Necronomicon, but at the end, it's D-O-L. So Necronomidol. See you next time.